Great. So I'm Rick Hansen, and it's June 15th, I believe, 2016. All right, okay, good. And as you may know, I was traveling quite a lot. And at the tail end of my travels, I was up in Montana, in Miles City, at the Monroe plot on the Miles City Cemetery there, Custer Valley Cemetery, and laid my mother's and father's ashes to rest. And so I want to kind of explore that and related themes, in part related to the Buddha's encouragement among the practices of mindfulness of the body that we actually contemplate, even quite specifically, the eventual passing away of this particular body, as well as, of course, the much like the bodies of others pass away as well. And so I want to give you a bit of a trigger alert, trigger warning. You know, I'm going to talk about death, and I will quote the Buddha, who's really quite specific about the decay of the body. You may have come across that language elsewhere. And I want to embed it in a larger frame, because the point of all this is not some kind of morbid nihilism. The Buddha was very strong against that. But it's to realize that these recognitions and the feeling of the recognition is actually a major aid to a lasting freedom, in internal freedom in terms of reactivity and fundamental inner peace. So how do you put all that together? I want to offer a variety of reflections, including some quotations from the Buddha, and then open it up, see what you make of it. So there's a traditional passage from Tibet, I believe. There are five questions, basic five questions, five reflections. And these are reflections for individuals. The first reflection is it given to me to avoid aging? Second question is it given to me to avoid illness? Third question, is it given to me to avoid death? Fourth question, is it given to me to avoid being separated one way or another, one time or another, eventually, from everything I love? And then the fifth and final question is it given to me to avoid inheriting the results of my actions? There's no right answer to any of those questions. They're personal reflections, but they're really quite real, aren't they? They really engage us. And they're very fundamental matters. There I was in Miles City, little canisters holding the earthly remains, as it were, both my mother and my father. There was a service, which was actually very moving. We went away. We had a dinner. The dinner ended. The next day, my family and I were about to drive to the family ranch in North Dakota, several hours away, and I went back to the cemetery alone just to sort of see what was there. And what was there were two little pieces of kind of carved stone in the ground. You know, William Roderick Hansen, Helen Bordley Hansen, date of birth, date of death. A little comment about my father that you could fit in a plaque, never fenced in, grew up as a cowboy on a ranch in North Dakota, really. Child of pioneers, became a pioneer himself. My mother lived with enthusiasm. You may know the root of the meaning of the word enthusiasm, God within, Deus within, you know, to live with. Lived by the divine, lived by enthusiasm, certainly her. And that was it. The wind was blowing, I could hear the birds calling, smell the grass, peaceful, pleasant. Looking at other stones there, people, my father's parents, mother and father, who were very, very close to my mother. Older, even people who had been there before that. You know, these were pioneers moving out into the West, homesteaders, farmers, ranchers, and related professions, and all gone, all gone, all turned to dust, as it were. And feeling there both this enormous continuity of wind and water and trees and grass and whole ecosystems, you know, life altogether, continuity. And at the same time, of course, the inevitability of passing away. All these little things endlessly passing away. And to hold that, I'm reminded of several sort of brief quotes from really developed teachers. You may have quotations of your own, you know, from teachers perhaps even in other traditions. One is Nisargadatta Maharaj. This was an Indian man who actually sold cigarettes and lived a very simple life, enormously deep, profound, non-dual teacher. Has died. And he said, wisdom tells me I'm nothing. Love tells me I'm everything. And between these two banks, the river of my life flows. And then from an utterly different tradition, separated geographically, probably had no contact at all with each other in any kind of way, there's Kalu Rinpoche, Tibetan Buddhist tradition, great teacher, beautiful, smiling, childlike, wise face, you know, if, like a delighted 9-year-old boy were an enlightened saint, you know, that's kind of like what his face looks like. And you can see that face in this what's called Gratitude Hut out at Spirit Rock, or look at it online. This is a close quotation. He says, basically, you live in illusion and don't know the truth of things. When you recognize the truth of things, you realize that you are nothing. Realizing that you are nothing, you are everything. That is all. Thanks, Kalu Rinpoche. But right there, that is all. Right? So you see again this play of everything, of something, nothing, everything. I'm also reminded of another Tibetan Buddhist teacher. I think the last Karmapa, in terms of their model of reincarnation, there's a man today who's the next Karmapa in that lineage. I think he's late 20s, somewhere in there. But the previous Karmapa was dying, and his close students, who loved him dearly, were really upset about that. And after a while, to comfort them, he said, with regard to his own death, don't worry, nothing happens. What? Okay. So you can see, you can feel maybe through these words, this profundity. I mean, these people are just in the most direct and simple way, just kind of sharing their condition, their mind stream, their experience of living, what seems self-evidently true to them. And it's in that context, then, that I want to kind of move toward now words of the Buddha on this topic. So as context, you may know that we've been engaging the four foundations of mindfulness this year. I think by next week, I'll print it up another 100 of them. You're really happy to... Oh, we have a bunch more? Oh, good. Well, we'll put more out, and we should always have them out, so you can take them home, bring it here if you like. It's a fundamental teaching of the Buddha about practice. And, you know, the four foundations, the teaching of it basically starts out, this is the direct path for the purification of beings, for the surmounting of sorrow and lamentation, for the disappearance of suffering and discontent, and for the realization of Nibbana, you know, complete awakening. So that's how he starts out. This is what you ought to do. And there's this recurring refrain in which he says, here, in regard to the body, you should abide contemplating the body, diligent, clearly knowing and mindful, free from desire and discontent in regard to the world. And then also the other three foundations of mindfulness, which I'm going to start moving into beginning next week, include mindfulness, second, of the sense of experience as pleasant, unpleasant, or neutral. third foundation of mindfulness is a mindfulness of basically the quality or tone in the mind. Is it contracted or open? Is it stressed and driven or relaxed and peaceful? Is it loving or hateful? Is it calm or agitated? And then the fourth foundation of mindfulness is mindfulness of a variety of specific themes, such as factors of awakening, hindrances to awakening, or the Four Noble Truths themselves. But in regard to all of them, the recurring refrain, again and again, is to abide clearly knowing, free from desires and discontent in regard to the world or anything at all. That's the refrain. And then with regard to whatever we are mindful of, okay, we have this recurring instruction. In regard to the body, and I'll do it with the body, you should abide contemplating the body internally in terms of what it feels like on the inside. Or you can abide contemplating the body externally from a kind of third-person perspective as the thing in its own right. Or you can abide contemplating the body both internally and externally. Or you can abide contemplating the nature of arising in the body, or abide contemplating the nature of passing away in the body, or abide contemplating the nature of both arising and passing away in the body. Or mindfulness that there is a body, simply that, as your mind gets very quiet, or mindfulness that there is a body is established to the extent necessary for bare knowledge and continuous mindfulness. And in this way, you abide independent, not clinging to anything in the world. So, you got those? So you abide contemplating from the inside out, or contemplate in a more kind of third-person, bird's-eye view perspective, in part aided sometimes by recognizing your own nature and other people, and the nature of other people, the qualities, the processes, the issues of other people and yourself, or back and forth. Or simply focusing primarily on a sense of phenomena arising, or phenomena passing away, or both arising and passing away. Or, especially as your mind gets really quiet, kind of a background, bare sense of knowing, ongoing knowing, there is a body, or whatever you're contemplating. Okay, is that pretty clear? Fundamental instructions, and you go back, it's in plain English, no longer in obscure Pali. Okay so far? And then you have, and I think I'll read it to you now, a description of, what to be aware of. So we've gone through a variety of these things, and the one I'd like to share with you first is the elements of the body. And in long retreats or long monastic practices where people have a lot of time to do this, they really get into the detail of this. If you like, you can get into the detail of it. And the whole point of it is to find a kind of freedom. And to be clear about a very important thing, I was sad in Montana, North Dakota. I mean, feeling it right now, I could get teary really easily. And I'm very much at peace with the passing of my mother over 10 years ago, my father about 7 or 8 months ago. It's normal, it's all right, it's natural for us to have a lot of feelings about these things, including how we feel about our own death. I don't want to go. I like you. Why would I want to have the movie end, who does, really? Very few people do, really. Particularly if they're feeling okay, basically, in life. I reserve the right to, pull the switch, flip the switch if I'm in terminal pain or in some hopeless situation, but short of that, who wouldn't want to keep on going? Most people do. So it's okay to have all kinds of feelings about this. And this exploration here that the Buddha's recommending is not some kind of spiritual bypass. That was the third way that he found. It wasn't to just dive into the pleasures of the world hedonistically, you know, as many people do, for example, as a way to avoid recognizing the difficult things. On the other hand, he did the ascetic practices of his time and place. They're Jain, they were called J-A-I-N, intense practices of asceticism and pain and denial of the body, suppressing, numbing out. And he didn't find that that helped him either. So we have the middle way, where we open to the fullness of a human existence, including all the things we feel about the death of others and our own eventual death and all of that. We open to all of that, and we also try to find some fundamentally reliable, enduring peace and happiness and love in the midst of all that. Okay. So with regard to the body, he says, you can review the body. And I'm going to name all the parts he mentions, which get quite concrete. He says, you can review the body up from the soles of the feet and down from the top of the hair, enclosed by skin. And there's some controversy about this part. As full of many kinds of impurities, the point of it all is to encourage a kind of disenchantment, a kind of non-clinging to the body. It's not that the flesh was bad. It's that it's a way to kind of see it with really clear eyes and not glamorize it. So I think it's particularly helpful in a culture like our own that it's so focused on glamorizing image, you know, all the rest of that. Okay. So we try to be aware of head hairs, body hairs, nails, teeth, skin, flesh, sinews, bones, bone marrow, kidneys, heart, liver, diaphragm, spleen. With me so far? Lungs, bowels, mesentery.
What's that?
Any doctors in the room? Mesentery? Good. Yeah, good. Yeah, great. Okay. Contents of the stomach, feces, bile, phlegm, pus, blood, sweat, fat, tears, grease, spittle, snot, oil of the joints, and urine. Just as though there were a bag with an opening at both ends full of many sorts of grain, such as hill rice, red rice, beans. He was a farmer, actually. Peas, millet, and white rice. And a man or woman with good eyes were to open it and review it thus. This is hill rice. This is red rice. These are beans. These are peas. This is millet. This is white rice. So, too, you should review your body and recognize blah, 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 all the various parts. It's just stuff. Right. Then he goes into eventually the corpse and decay. Okay. Trigger alert here. Again, and this is a meditation. You can do it if you want. Don't do it if it's not useful. As though you were to see a corpse thrown aside in a charnel ground, 1, 2, or 3 days dead, bloated, livid, and oozing matter, being devoured by crows, hawks, vultures, dogs, jackals, or various kinds of worms. You visualize that. Then you take it further into the process eventually of dissolution and decay. A skeleton with flesh and blood held together with sinews. Further, a fleshless skeleton smeared with blood, held together with sinews. Further, a skeleton without flesh and blood, held together with sinews. And then further, disconnected bones scattered in all directions. Further, bones bleached white, the color of shells. Further, bones heaped up more than a year old. Further, bones rotten and crumbling to dust. You compare this same body with that image of the eventual process, and you realize to yourself, this body too is of the same nature, and it will be like that. It is not exempt from that same fate. In this way...
Besides, you should mention the 3D mummy.
Oh, the 3D mummy, maybe. So, And then the point of all this, though, listen up here. The point of all this here, that's right, is that you're mindful of these things. And through your mindfulness, you abide independent, not clinging to anything in the world. Okay. All right, that was the bad part. It's all over now. Okay? All right? But it's quite something to contemplate it. And I want to tell you a little bit about my experience in Greece and a kind of very profound sort of, it's like a feeling image that came to me there that's been very deep with me since. And we'll see what you make of all this. In Greece, where I got to be a tourist for a while, one thing that really, really struck me was, and it's really hard to really convey it, it's basically the sense of time and timelessness. So on the one hand, there you see like a line of stones in some field, and you look closely and you realize from the nature of the blocks, those were probably laid in the ground 2,000 years ago or 3,000 years ago. Or I went to Crete, I went to islands that were formed from volcanic eruptions about 3,600 years ago, changed the course of Minoan civilization, opened the door for classical Greek civilization, and then, you know, the rest from there. And also, I was in places where there were forts laid in there originally, replaced by, you know, Minoan forts, replaced by ancient classical Greek forts, replaced by Roman forts, replaced by forts from Venice, replaced by Turkish forts, all in the same spot in Crete, you know, replaced eventually with Greek, through Greek independence, forts of their own. So much blood in that ground. So much blood in the ground, you know. You could really feel it, know it. All these swirls moving through history, leading to this moment in which I, as a tourist, was just standing there on a beautiful, you know, late spring day. So weird. And what really came to me was this very deep felt sense of a way of describing reality, essentially, in terms of ripples of various kinds, a thought, a cloud, a nebula is a kind of ripple in a stream. Let's say your life is a stream. Each person in this room is a stream of some kind in which there are many ripples, many thoughts, many sensations, ripples of mind, ripples of matter. You know, no different, you know, just ripples rippling along, contained in streams, streaming along in this vast river of basically everything. You can look, you know, upstream, all the causes prior to us, you know. I'm here today as the result of a vast collection of causes that streamed in part through Crete, ancient processes streaming through Europe. My mother and father met in an unlikely setting, late 1945, in a dance for him as an army airman and her as a WAC. You know, they were there. She came from LA. He came from North Dakota. They never would have met. They met. Why did they meet? World War II, why World War II, Hitler, Germany, World War I, Archduke Ferdinand. I'm here because somebody basically shot some Duke, triggering World War I, World War II, and here we are today. What the, you know? And then it goes forward. My kids are here, I met my wife. She was keeping my roommate steady as he tripped on acid as I came home that night. What's going on? Anyway, you know, here we are. And so it's really wild to get. Everything is just a ripple in a stream in the river of reality contained for me, in my view of things, in the unconditioned. By other words, perhaps, the transcendental, the divine, the mystery, whatever. And yes, we should do everything we can to be kind to the ripples, you know, encourage good ripples, right? But be the river. That's the fundamental teaching of all the people I've quoted and the Buddha himself. Recognize the dispersing, inherently dispersing nature of every ripple in every stream. And realize as well, though, that the ripple is just a local expression of that particular stream. And each stream is a local expression of this vast river of reality. And by recognizing this in a funny kind of way, you don't move to despair, but instead a deep comfort. You know, when I look upstream, I realize that there have been so many physical causes, the Big Bang, you know, the formation of heavy elements forming rocky planets, and then biological evolution, and comets hit the Earth 65 million years ago, asteroids, boom, no more dinosaurs, pretty much. Here I am today, all these causes, all these physical processes, you know, like dominoes, tick, 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 tick. Suddenly, there was enough stuff coming together so that, pop, I could have so far 63 years of phenomenology, 63 years of experiencing, you know, starting somewhere when I was still inside my mother's womb. I began having experiences. You know, and at some point, those physical causes will, as every eddy does, as every stream does, they too will disperse. This mind process, as I know it, will end or change into something very different. And yet, this whole streaming will be ongoing. How do you make of it? Do you despair that your movie of mind will end someday? You know, or do you feel, oh my God, goodness, how lucky I am that all those causes happened that enabled me for the duration of my lifespan, boop, to pop into consciousness. And then spreading out into everything again. Okay. What's Nisargadatta say? Wisdom tells me I'm nothing. Love tells me I have everything. Between those two banks, the river of my life flows. What do you make of all that? I should go to North Dakota more often, right? Get out of town more often. Yeah, you know, and I'll just open it up. We'll end in about 5 minutes, not go over long, you know. And I want to also stress, I don't think there's a right way to talk about this stuff or think about it. People have different ways. I'm not trying to impose my way. I laughed with my friends my whole time. I was gone for about 6-7 weeks. I said it was like being on retreat with ruins, olives, and wine. So anyway, you know, that's my way of feeling into this stuff. Ripples, streams, river, contained in the banks of the transcendental. Question, comment, takeaway, more good quotes. Great.
My younger brother died in January, and I have to go spread his ashes. Yeah. And hearing your experience, I've decided for Father's Day, I'm visiting my two middle sons up in Humboldt County, and I wanted to go to the ocean, Pacific Ocean, because it's oceanic.
Yeah.
It's every, you know, it covers the earth, and it was good to hear your experience.
Thank you. Good. Thank you. Yeah. Yeah. Yeah, please.
I've always found this part of the meditation on the body, the kind of, I think he uses the word putrid, almost. It's one of the hardest ones to accept in this culture, especially.
Yeah.
It's almost like how many in this room accept their body for what it is right now, to begin with? And it's almost like you have to accept it before you reject it.
I think what you said there is very deep and right. It's about acceptance, you know, including the sensations of the body. You know, when that car alarm or whatever it was going off, right? So there's sound that's being produced by the body, although it's an experience. And then there's annoyance at the sound, right, or what have you. You know, that's part of the body too, and it's the mind about the body. But yeah, to accept all that really deeply. Yeah. 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 And I think maybe I could just offer this too. There's something about it that's, it's like, really getting it, that it doesn't matter whether we accept it or not. That's what's going to happen to the body. You know, I was right there when my dad died. I literally was right there. I watched him stop breathing, and then I watched the pulse stop at his neck. And he was utterly at peace, but a lot of people aren't, you know? And whether you're at peace or not, is it, you know, is it given to me not to age, not to get sick, not to die, not to be separated, not to inherit the results of my actions, whether you like it or not, you know? I know you know that. I'm saying it for everybody. Me too. Yeah, maybe another person? Yeah, Sharon, great, let's be last here.
Working as a nurse, yeah. Lots of death, lots of holding hands. And just recently, there seems to be a sense of acceptance, a sense of just going with a river when it's close. So my sense of the actual crossing over or end, not for everyone, sometimes there's a horrible struggle, but yet it's still there and yeah. Dealt with, like, you know, driving on the freeway or something, it's done.
Yeah.
But the severing of the relationships with the people connected leaves me in awe.
Yeah.
Absolute deep awe. I guess you sense, just sense it.
Yeah.
Be with it.
Maybe that's a good place to end. Just awe. Yeah. You know, mystery, just. Okay, let's sit for a minute. Take care. I'll see you next week.
You know, Rick, I've been